We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 4, Four Categories of Annihilation, verses 1 to 43. We'll do the whole chapter in the first class. Verse 1, Shri Shukravacha, Kalaste Paramanvatir Deep, Paradhavatir Nipa, Gatita Yugamanam Cha Shinu Kapalayavapi. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, "My dear King, I have already described to you the measurements of time, beginning from the smallest fraction, measured by the movement of a single atom, up to the total lifespan of Lord Brahma. I have also discussed the measurement of the different millennia of universal history. Now hear about the time of Brahma's day and the process of annihilation." Mukkam karati vachalam bhangam langhayate girim yakikantam aham vande shri guru diratavinam om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshumiritam yena tasmai shri guru diratavinam. So what do you remember from yesterday's class? Lishuka. Okay, two questions by Maharaj Parikshit about the yugas, measurement of time, and also about the how to contract the contamination of Kali Yuga. And what was the answer? How to contract the contamination of Kali Yuga? Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hari Nam Sankirtan. That is, you're so fortunate to be born in this Kali Yuga because it is a sub-period of the Kali Yuga where Lord Chaitanya came. Yes? Just by chanting, you can do what everyone did in all the other ages, and it's more powerful in this age. Although the chanting is powerful in every age, but in this age, it's especially powerful. Okay, yes, Jagaguru? Transcendental knowledge and detachment from hearing the account of the kings. The account of the kings was not that important, but actually what we get from it, the result of transcendental knowledge and detachment. Is that what you wanted to say? Yeah.
Yes.
Satyuga's predominance is Satvagun.
Treta passion.
Dwapara passion ignorance.
Kali Yuga ignorance.
Yeah, so if you just simply exist in these ages, then you will be exposed to these different atmospheres. If you're in Satya Yuga, your mind will naturally be exposed to goodness, and you will be led in that way. And if you're in Kali Yuga, then your mind will naturally be exposed to ignorance, and you will tend to go that way, unless you meet a devotee of Krishna. And then your whole life changes. Okay? Anything else you remember from yesterday's class? Yes?
Leaders should follow the legislative principles and preach.
Leaders of our movement should follow the regulative principles and preach, and then the movement will go on very strongly, nicely. Achara and prachar is very important. Prabhupada said that. Is that Prabhupada? Yeah, I quoted Prabhupada. Yes, it was Prabhupada. Yeah, okay. Anything else from yesterday's class? Yes?
By the force of time, modes of nation, always in motion.
Okay.
And then Satya Yuga. The religion might flourish.
Yes. By time, the modes are always in motion. So even in Satya Yuga, a demon may come. And even in Kali Yuga, Dharma may flourish. And that's what we are experiencing in this 10,000 years sub-period of Kali Yuga, which we are very fortunate to be in. A very astrologically good time, no matter what anybody says about all the things that are going to happen. It's still the best time to be. And even people in the other yugas want to be born in this Kali Yuga so they can get that chance to quickly go back to Godhead. Okay, so we'll start today's class. We're going to hear about destruction today. So all those of you who like to hear, who are destruction-minded, you will be happy to hear today's class. Or if you're interested in merging into the Pradhan or whatever is there, into Vishnu, you will be happy. Or if you want to go back to Godhead, that is also there. It's something for everyone. So, the first verse, he says, "I have answered your questions about time and universal history, millenniums. Now he's going to talk about Brahma's day and the process of annihilation. So this is in continuation on the topic of time. It is one of the topics of Bhagavatam. So we will hear this today. Verse 2, 1,000 cycles of four ages constitute a single day of Brahma, known as a kalpa. In that period, O King, 14 manus come and go. Verse 3, after one day of Brahma, annihilation occurs during his night, which is of the same duration. At that time, all the three planetary systems are subject to destruction. So what happens to everyone when Brahma's day ends? I have something from third canto, which explains what happens to us. It's canto 3, chapter 11, verse 28. At the end of the day, under the insignificant portion of the mode of darkness, the powerful manifestation of the universe merges in the darkness of night. By the influence of eternal time, the innumerable living entities remain merged in that dissolution, and everything is silent. So Prabhupada says this is an explanation of the night of Brahma. Nobody is alive to see it except for one person. And who is that one person? We're going to hear about him in this canto. Markandeya Rishi, yes. He got the benediction to live for 7 days of Brahma and 7 nights. So was it a benediction or was it a curse? We'll find out next week. And so Prabhupada says the dissolution of the three worlds is effected by the incarnation of darkness, Rudra, represented by the fire of eternal time which blazes over the three worlds. The three worlds are known as Bhur, Bhuvar, and Swar, Patala, Martya, Swarga. The innumerable living entities merge into that dissolution, which appears to be the dropping of the curtain of the scene of the Supreme Lord's energy, so everything becomes silent. So at the end of the drama, the curtain closes, and that's what happens at the end of the day of Brahma. The drama of the whole day of Brahma has finished, and the curtain closes, and everything is quiet. So then third canto continues, when the night of Brahma ensues, all the three worlds are out of sight, and the sun and moon are without glare, just as in the due course of an ordinary night. So nighttime we see no sun. But Prabhupada says that actually they disappear from the three worlds, but the sun and moon themselves do not vanish. So sun and moon are not destroyed. They appear in the remaining portion of the universe, which is beyond the sphere of the three worlds. So who knows what portion that is? Which part of the universe is not destroyed at the night of Brahma? Yeah? Mahar, Jana, Tapa, and Satya. The four higher planetary systems are not. And it's described, but in Mahar Loka it becomes too hot, so they have to fly to higher planets. The sages in Mahar Loka fly in airplanes to the higher planets when it gets too hot below. The fire is very strong, so they go. Oh yeah, that's what it says here in that next verse, 3:11:30. Sages like Bhrigu and other inhabitants of Mahaloka transport themselves to Janaloka at the end of the day of Brahma. And then it also describes that at the beginning of devastation, all the seas overflow, and hurricane winds blow very violently. Thus the waves of the seas become ferocious, and in no time at all the three worlds are full of water. So Prabhupada explains, first, the blazing fire from the mouth of Sankarshan rages for 100 years of the demigods, 36,000 human years. So the fire is going on for 36,000 years in the lower planets. And then for another 36,000 years, there are torrents of rain accompanied by violent winds and waves, and the seas and oceans overflow. So you might be wanting water when you're burning, so then you're going to get water, but much more than you want. These reactions of 72,000 years are the beginning of the partial devastation of the three worlds. People forget all these devastations of the worlds and think themselves happy in the material progress of civilization. So it seems that we experience these devastations in some way or other, according to Srila Prabhupada, that we forget. And we do suffer during those devastations in some way or other. How we can survive, I don't know, but it sounds like we do. verse 4. This is called a naimitika, or occasional annihilation, during which the original creator, Lord Narayan, lies down upon the bed of Ananta, Shesh, and absorbs the entire universe within himself while Lord Brahma sleeps. So this is at the end of the day of Brahma. And the higher planets are there, but it appears, according to this, that they also must go inside the Narayan, Lord Brahma also. Vishnu Chakravarti, Naimitika, destruction, is the first of the four types of destruction. Of course, they can sleep outside, I guess. They don't have to sleep inside Narayan. Narayan withdraws the universe into himself and sleeps. Oh, here, yes. Vishnu says, Brahma also enters Narayan and sleeps. But taking Brahma's sleep as the cause, Nimitta, the Lord destroys the three worlds. So that's, it's Naimitika, it's called, because Brahma's sleep is the cause, Nimitta. So it's called Naimitika. And this is a daily destruction. Every day this happens. It's daily for Brahma, not for us, of course. At the end of his day, everything is finished. When he sleeps, then that means everything is finished. So how powerful is Lord Brahma? If he just goes to sleep at the end of his life, I hope he doesn't sleep during the day. You know, maybe sometimes if he has a short nap and there's a small destruction there. So when he sleeps at night, then he, everything is finished. Now again, back to third canto. Some people don't sleep. And who are these people? They're the people, the sages on Janaloka. The Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, lies down in the water on the seat of Ananta with his eyes closed. And the inhabitants of Janaloka planets offer their glorious prayers to the Lord with folded hands. So then Prabhupada explains how the Lord doesn't sleep like us. It's Yoga Nidra. And but the sages are awake and they're glorifying the Lord. So I'll just sing one of those prayers, the personified Vedas. It's first verse of the prayers personified Vedas, 10:87-14. Jaya 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 Jam Achita Dosha Gribhita Gunam Tvamasya Ratmana Samavarudha Samastapaka Akajagarokasam Akila Shaktyavabodhakate Kvachira Jayatmana Chacharata Anucharenigama. Shruti said, victory, victory to you, O unconquerable one. By your very nature, you are perfectly full in all opulences. Therefore, please defeat the eternal power of illusion, who assumes control over the modes of nature to create difficulties for conditioned souls. O you who awaken all the energies of moving and non-moving embodied beings, sometimes the Vedas can recognize you as you sport with your material and spiritual potencies. So that's the first prayer of personified Vedas. So this is what they sing. I mean, one of the things they sing, at least. While he's sleeping. So back to third canto, 3:11-33. So the process, okay, so then it goes into Brahma's end of life. The process of exhaustion of duration of life exists for every one of the living beings, including Lord Brahma. One's life endures for only 100 years in terms of the times in the different planets. And so we, of course, don't get our 100 years now in Kali Yuga, for sure. But in the old days, people used to live for 100 years. And so we'll hear about now the lifetime of Brahma in the next verses. And we'll hear about it from third canto first. It says the duration, this is verse 38, 3:11. Duration of the two parts of Brahma's life is above mentioned, is calculated to be equal to one nimesha, less than a second, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchanging and unlimited, and is the cause of all causes of the universe. So just imagine the time of Vishnu. He just blinks and everything is, that's when it's finished, right? When he opens his eyes, when he opens his eyes, it is created. Everything is created. And when he blinks his eye, in less than a second, everything is finished. Just a blink. Nimesha. How much is a nimesha? Maybe you can, it's not much, huh? You know? In third canto, it tells how much is a nimesha. That's how much time it is for Vishnu, this creation and destruction, the lifetime of Brahma. One nimesha.
Half a second,
okay. So for Vishnu, the creation and destruction takes 1 second. The destruction takes only half a second in his time. So just imagine his time. In the spiritual world, of course, there is no time as such as we have. There is a time maybe there, but it's under the control of Krishna. Of course, here also it's under the control of Krishna. But it's not like time here. So I'll just read one verse that's quoted by Prabhupada from Brahma Samhita. Yasyaikanisha sitakala matavalambya jivantiloma vilaja jagarandanata Vishnur mahansa ihyasa kala vishesha govindamadi purishantamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cause of all causes, whose plenary portion is Mahavishnu. All the heads of the innumerable universes, Brahmas, live only by taking shelter of the time occupied by one of his breaths. So, verse 5, we're going to hear now about the lifetime of Brahma. So we heard the first destruction, the first annihilation was the day of Brahma. Now we're going to hear, this is leading into the destruction at the end of Brahma's life. Verse 5, when the two halves of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the most elevated created being, are complete, the seven basic elements of creation are annihilated. Vishnu Chakravarti comments, the destruction into Prakriti is described in 2 verses. The first half of Brahma's life has passed. When the second half is completed, when Brahma's life has ended, the seven elements consisting of Mahatattva, Ahankara, and 5 tanmatras are destroyed. So again, in the third canto, verse 34, 100 years of Brahma's life are divided into 2 parts, first half and second half. So we're now in the second half of Brahma's life. So in case anybody here goes to Brahma Loka, you have a long time to live before you go back to Godhead. That's half of his life, some trillions of years, some million trillions of years. So better go back to Godhead. Okay. But Prabhupada comments that time can only control those who are body conscious, even up to Satyaloka or other higher planets of the universe. So if you want to be free from time, don't be body conscious. Verse 6, so King, upon annihilation of material elements, the universal egg comprising the elemental amalgamation of creation is confronted with destruction. Purport, it is significant that Shukadeva Goswami, spiritual master of King Parikshit, is broadly discussing cosmic annihilation just before the death of his disciple. By attentively hearing the story of universal destruction, one can easily understand one's personal departure from this temporary world to be an insignificant incident within the gigantic scope of the total material manifestation. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the total universes are just like a bag of mustard seeds. So our universe is one mustard seed. So if our universe is one mustard seed, what does that make us? I don't know. You know how big is a mustard seed? It's very small. So we're just one little something in a bag of mustard seeds, in one of the mustard seeds. And so that's us. That's what we have to think about when we hear these things. By his deep and relevant discussions of the creation of God, Shukadeva Goswami is an ideal spiritual master, is preparing his disciple for the moment of death. And we should also prepare, as Satyavati was telling us yesterday, there is a demoniac planet on the way. So we must all beware. Death is coming. And it may come next year, if we're fortunate or unfortunate, as the case may be. If we're prepared, then we'll be very fortunate. And if we're not prepared, then come back again for the rest of the annihilation. I mean, this planet is not listed in Bhagavatam as one of the annihilations, so don't worry. It's not in Bhagavatam. We don't have to worry about that annihilation. But you can worry if you like. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. Okay, verse 7. No, we will still read about verse 6. Yes, 11th canto, 3rd chapter. Okay, it talks about the total annihilation. When annihilation of the material elements is imminent, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form of eternal time withdraws the manifest cosmos consisting of gross and subtle features, and the entire universe vanishes into non-manifestation. Okay, so it's... Prabhupada describes when he casts his glance in the form of Kala, then material interactions take place. Now, the same Kala that incited the creation, the same Kala is responsible for destruction. It's the same time factor that's creating and destroying, according to Srila Prabhupada. This is 11.3.8. Okay, according to our dear commentators. So then it merges. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the time potsi itself, Kala, is then withdrawn, and it merges into the Supreme Soul, Govindamari Purusham, Tamaham Bhajami. Okay. Yeah, in the spiritual world, these things don't exist, so you don't have to worry. Better go there. Don't have to go there. Better to go there, I mean. Verse 7. Okay, now let's hear what's going to happen at annihilation. After some trillions of years, it's only halfway, so don't. It's a long time, you don't have to worry. As annihilation approaches, O King, there will be no rain upon the earth for 100 years. Drought will lead to famine, and the starving populace will literally consume one another. Inhabitants of the earth, bewildered by the force of time, will gradually be destroyed. So from 11.3.9, as cosmic annihilation approaches, a terrible drought takes place on the earth for 100 years. For 100 years, the heat of the sun gradually increases, and its blazing heat begins to torment the three worlds. So first there's no rain, and at the same time, the sun becomes hotter. So that 100 years, you don't want to be here. That last 100 years of the whole universe is a very terrible time. All the three worlds, not just the earth, suffers. Even Swarga, there will be suffering. And Ombu, Bhuvarswar, all three will be suffering here. So then, yes, yesterday I started to tell, the Prabhupada was talking to that Allen Ginsberg. And Allen Ginsberg was asking about the devotees. And Prabhupada said, yes, they will all be back to Godhead by the end of Kali Yuga. And then Allen Ginsberg says, what about us? Who are still going to be here or at the end of the universe? And Prabhupada leaned over and said, it's I eat you and you eat me. That's what it's going to be like. Everybody would just be eating each other. I mean, we don't want to be here because there's nothing to eat except whoever's there. So the food will become each other. That will be the food of the people at the end of the annihilation. Even at the end of Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said it's like that too. So yeah, survival of the fittest. Yeah, whoever can eat the other one survives. Yes.
That's the philosophy nowadays.
So
that's the philosophy nowadays.
That's the philosophy. Yeah, survival of the fittest. Yes, but Prabhupada said nobody is fit because nobody survives. Everybody must die. So. Yeah, somebody was complaining to Prabhupada, oh, the death rate in India is so high, and Prabhupada said, it's everywhere the same, 100%. What do you think, why is India anymore? It's 100% everywhere. Everybody has to die. Why in India? So verse 8. The sun, in its annihilating form, will drink up with its terrible rays all the water of the ocean, of living bodies, and of the earth itself. But the devastating sun will not give any rain in return. Verse 9. Next, the great fire of annihilation will flare up from the mouth of Lord Sankarsan. Carried by the mighty force of the wind, this fire will burn throughout the universe, scorching the lifeless cosmic shell. So nobody is going to be there. Then in 11th canto, chapter 3, it says, beginning from Patala Loka, a fire grows emanating from the mouth of Lord Sankarshan. Its flames shooting upward, driven by great winds. It scorches everything in all directions. So at this point, Sankarshan is angry. And that's why fire is coming out of his mouth. Now, does anybody remember why is he angry? I think it's from 5th canto, yeah? Because the living entities have not taken their chance to go back home, back to Godhead. So he's angry, and he burns everybody up with his anger. So don't come, don't be here for that. Verse 10, burnt from all sides, from above by the blazing sun, from below by the fire of Lord Sankarshan, the universal sphere will glow like a burning ball of cow dung. Verse 11, a great and terrible wind of destruction will begin to blow for more than 100 years, and the sky covered with dust will turn gray. After that, O King, groups of multicolored clouds will gather, roaring terribly with thunder, and will pour down floods of rain for 100 years. Who is there to see these multicolored clouds? I was just wondering. I guess they know this because it's from Krishna. So these, what are the name of these clouds? According to 11th canto, Samvartaka. For 100 years, pouring down, flooding down in raindrops as long as the trunk of an elephant, the deadly rainfall submerges the entire universe in water. Verse 13, at that time, the shell of the universe will fill up with water, forming a single cosmic ocean. The scientists call it the primordial soup. But it's not the primordial, it's the soup at the end. Yeah, 14. As the entire universe is flooded, the water will rob the earth of its unique quality of fragrance, and the element earth, deprived of its distinguishing quality, will be dissolved. Purport is clearly explained throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. The first element, sky, possesses the unique quality of sound. Its creation expands. The second element, air, comes into being, and it possesses sound and touch. The third element, fire, possesses sound, touch, and form. And the fourth element, water, possesses sound, touch, form, and flavor. The earth possesses sound, touch, form, flavor, and aroma. As each element loses its unique distinguishing quality, it naturally becomes indistinguishable from the more subtle elements and is thus effectively dissolved as a unique entity. So earth dissolves into water, water dissolves into fire, fire dissolves into air, and air dissolves into ether. So then, this is also described in the 11th canto, 3rd chapter. And the comment there is that in reverse order, the creation is wound up. So we hear the, as we said before, it's like a movie going backwards. So now the movie is going backwards. From first about creation, now it's destruction. And this is the universal destruction. And we'll hear the name of it. I forgot the name of it, but we'll hear it very soon. Universal destruction. What is it? Prakritika. Okay, thank you. And it's not the final destruction. Isn't that interesting? This Prakritika destruction is not final. We'll hear what the final is after that. I mean, it'll be the last one in the list. Four destructions. Well, we heard the Naimitika, now we're hearing the Prakritika, the universal. 15 to 19. The element fire then ceases to taste from the element water, which, deprived of its unique quality taste, merges into fire. Air seizes the form inherent in fire. Then fire, deprived of form, merges into air. The element ether seizes the quality of air, namely touch, and that air enters into ether. Then, O King, false ego in ignorance seizes sound, quality of ether, after which ether merges into false ego. False ego in the mode of passion takes hold of the senses, and false ego in the mode of goodness absorbs the demigods. Then the total Mahat-tattva seizes false ego along with its various functions, and the Mahat is seized by the three basic modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. My dear King Pariksit, these modes are further overtaken by the original unmanifest form of nature impelled by time. That our manifest nature is not subject to the six kinds of transformation caused by the influence of time. Rather, it has no beginning and no end. It is the our manifest, eternal, and infallible cause of creation. 2021. In the unmanifest stage of material nature called Pradhan, there is no expression of words, no mind, no manifestation of these subtle elements beginning from the Mahat, nor are there the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There is no life, air, or intelligence, nor any senses or demigods. There is no definite arrangement of planetary systems, nor are there present the different stages of consciousness, sleep, wakefulness, and deep sleep. So you're not in deep sleep, so where are you? You're just merged. There is no ether, water, air, fire, or sun. Earth, air, fire, or sun. Situation is just like that of complete sleep or of voidness. Indeed, it is indescribable. Authorities in spiritual science explain, however, that since Pradhana is the original substance, it is the actual basis of material creation. So I have a quote from 3rd Canto, 26th chapter, verse 10. And it says that the unmanifested eternal combination of three modes is the cause of the manifest state and is called Pradhan. It is called Prakriti when in the manifested stage of existence. Okay. And then again, there's another definition of Pradhan. In the next verse, 11, the aggregate elements, the five gross elements, five subtle elements, four internal senses, five senses for gathering knowledge, and five outward organs of action are known as the Pradhan. But none of them are manifest. So they're all in there, but you can't see them. Not manifest. Then Prabhupada explains, according to Bhagavad Gita, sum total of 24 elements is called Yonir Mahad Brahma. Sum total of living entities is impregnated into this Yonir Mahad Brahma, and they are born in different forms. So evidently we don't stay in the Pradhan at the end of creation. We go back into Mahavishnu, and we stay there until the next creation. So Pradhana doesn't have the jiva. The jiva comes at the beginning of creation as part of the glance of the Lord. Kala, karma, and jiva, they all come in the glance of the Lord to Prakriti. So those five are what are needed for creation. We need Purusha, the Supreme Lord, Prakriti, mother and father, and then he gives the jiva, kala, and karma into Yonir Mahad Brahma. So this is what happens. So it doesn't talk here where the living entities go, but they do go to the back to Mahavishnu.
Yonir Mahad Brahma means?
Yonir Mahad Brahma is a sum total of 24 elements known as Pradhan. That's what Prabhupada says here, 326.11 purport. Yonir Mahad Brahma. That is, I think, the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 4th verse, right? Yonir Mahad Brahma, aham bija para pita. No, Yonir Mahad Brahma is Pradhan. Pradhan, or Prakriti. That's Prakriti. The 24 elements. That's the unmanifested. Yonir Mahad Brahma is Pradhana, the unmanifested 24 elements and three modes. That's manifested.
So it's Prakriti as well?
It's Prakriti as well. Yeah. 22. This is annihilation called Prakritika, during which the energies belonging to the Supreme Person and his unmanifest material nature, disassembled by the force of time, are deprived of their potencies and merged together totally. So Prakritika and Naimitika, we've heard. I'll bring another quote from 11th Canto, 3rd chapter. Remember that purport about Brahma, where he goes, what happens to Brahma at the time of annihilation. There is four types. Anyway, the verse says, so then Vairaja Brahma, the soul of the universal form, gives up his universal body and enters into the subtle, unmanifest nature, like a fire that has run out of fuel. So here it tells, 11th Canto, what happens to the living entities. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the word Vairaja indicates the totality of the individual conditioned souls who originally take birth from Brahma are amalgamated back into him at the time of annihilation. So we go back into body of Brahma. Everybody who's left goes back to Brahma. And then where Brahma goes, he goes back to Godhead. But the body, we go in different places. So then there's four different types of destinations of Lord Brahma. Who can tell me one of those types of destination? Adi Purush?
Mahavishnu.
Yes. Which Brahma goes there? One who is attached to work. Okay. Creation. So this is the Karmi.
Next time is again.
Yeah, okay. The Karmi. Okay. What other destination?
One goes to Vaikuntha.
One goes back to Godhead. Very good. For who is that? He's the?
The devotee
goes back to Godhead. The Karmi Brahma goes to Mahavishnu back, like all the rest. Yes? The Jnani. Yeah, the Jnani goes to the Brahman. And there was one more.
Yeah.
He goes to Mahavishnu.
And he has to come back to Lord Brahma again.
Yeah, he has to come back again. Okay, so, but the basic ones are three types, the devotee, the Karmi, and the Jnani. So they're the most important ones to remember. The Karmi, Jnani, and the devotee, Brahma. And that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I do not want to be a non-devotee Brahma. I would rather be an insect in the home of a Vaishnava than a non-devotee Brahma. And his prayer, Manasadeho Geho. Verse 23. It is the absolute truth alone who manifests in the forms of intelligent senses and objects of sense perception, and who is their ultimate basis. Whatever has a beginning and an end is insubstantial because of being an object perceived by limited senses and because of being non-different from its own cause. So everybody understands that? Right. Okay. Krishna is everything. And if you see something that has a beginning and an end, then it's something temporary. It's not important. So verse purport. The word drishya dva indicates all subtle and gross material manifestations are made visible by the potency of the Supreme Lord and again become invisible or unmanifest at the time of annihilation. They are therefore in essence not separate from the source of their expansion and withdrawal. In other words, everything is Krishna, aham, evasam, evagre, the first of the Chaturshloki. So Vishnu Chakravarti also talks about the Mayavadis. The state of being one with Brahman in Atyantika Pralaya, by those desiring, that's another Pralaya, impersonal liberation is now described. That oneness with Brahman they desire will be produced when there is realization of the insubstantiality of the world of duality, which is an effect of Brahman. Thinking boldly in this way, they say this world is illusory. So now we heard about two different destructions, Naimitika, which is the end of the day of Brahma, and Prakritika, the end of the life of Brahma. Now we're going to hear about Atyantika, or final pralaya, final deliberation. 24. A lamp, the eye that views the light of that lamp, and the visible form that is viewed, are all basically non-different from the element fire. So we have to pay attention here. We've got a lamp. We've got somebody who's looking at the lamp. And we have the form of the lamp are all non-different from fire. In the same way, intelligent senses and sense perceptions have no existence separate from the supreme reality, although that absolute truth remains totally distinct from them. We're going to hear another analogy about a lamp very soon, so that might be more easy to understand in this chapter or the next. Verse 25, the three states of intelligence are called waking consciousness, sleep, and deep sleep. But, my dear king, the variegated experiences created for the pure living entity by these different states are nothing more than illusion. Okay, so we've got waking. What mode of nature is waking consciousness? Goodness. Sleep, which means dreaming. Dreaming is?
Passion.
And deep sleep is? Ignorance. Okay. So purport of 25. Pure Krishna consciousness exists beyond the various stages of material awareness. So that's Turiya, or the fourth level. Just as darkness vanishes in the presence of light, so illusory material intelligence, which is experienced as normal perception, dreaming, and deep sleep, completely vanishes in the brilliant presence of pure Krishna consciousness, constitutional condition of every living entity. So this is, all these verses are describing the atyantika, or final devastation. So in the fourth canto, 29th chapter, verse 71, it elaborates a little bit more. It says, when the living entity is in deep sleep, when he faints, when there is some great shock on account of severe loss, the time of death, or in the body temperature is very high, movement of the life air is arrested. At that time, the living entity loses knowledge of identifying the body with the self. So this is one type of annihilation. 42971, and Prabhupada also says under anesthesia. So these Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says the jiva has these three states, and these three states are false. That is explained in this verse. Waking, sleeping, deep sleep are functions of intelligence, and the variety that we see by these states of consciousness is false, since it's a covering on Brahman. So the illusion is that we are experiencing everything, all these different forms, but it's just, as we hear in second canto, it's a world of names. But the illusion, what is real, is if we use everything in the service of Krishna, then it becomes real, because then it's attached to reality. But if we see it separate from Krishna, then it's illusion, it's false. We see, okay, this is something separate for me to enjoy, this is something separate, then it's illusion. 26. Just as clouds in the sky come into being and are then dispersed by the amalgamation and dissolution of their constituent elements, this material universe is created and destroyed within the absolute truth by amalgamation and dissolution of its elemental constituent parts. Ugh. Okay. So the clouds are created and destroyed. So the universe is created and destroyed. They bring things together and destroy things. So this is the existence of the Lord. He is the one who is doing it. He is always there. And Vishnu comments that this analogy shows that the universe, just like clouds are created and destroyed in the sky, the universe is created and destroyed in Brahman. So in the sky refers to Brahman. The example of sky is used to show Paramatma is not contaminated by the universe, just as the sky is not contaminated by our formation of clouds. So two Chaturshloki verses are being explained in these verses. The first one, that Krishna is there, beginning, middle, and end. And the second one, that the illusory energy, if you see something separate from Krishna, that is maya, that is illusion. So both these things are being explained in these verses. Chaturshloki. 27. My dear king, it is stated in Vedanta Sutra, the ingredient cause that constitutes any manifested product in this universe can be perceived as a separate reality, just as the threads that make up a cloth can be perceived separately from their product. So, what does that mean? Who can explain this quotation from Vedanta Sutra? Okay, so in the same way, similarly, yes, Jagaguru? We can see the Lord. We can see the cause in the universe. He is the cause, so we can also see him. We can see him, the ingredient cause. It's Krishna. We can see him throughout the universe, and we can also see him separate, so simultaneously one and different. That's also the next verse of Chaturshloki, that he's within and he's not. It's just that he's entered and not entered. So verse 28, anything experienced in terms of general cause and effect, specific effect, must be illusion, because such causes and effects exist only relative to each other. Indeed, whatever has a beginning and an end is unreal. So if you see something that's temporary, that's causing something in this world, then it is, both of them are illusion because they're temporary. But we say only, no, it's temporary, it's real, but it's temporary. So this verse can be interpreted in different ways. Purport, the nature of a material cause cannot be perceived without perception of the effect. For example, The burning nature of fire cannot be perceived without observing the effect of fire, such as a burning object or ashes. So if you want to see fire, the only way you can see it is you need something to burn. You need something from this world to burn. Similarly, the saturating quality of water cannot be understood without observing the effect, a saturated cloth or paper. The organizational power of a man cannot be understood without observing the effect of his dynamic work, namely a solid institution. In this way, not only do effects depend upon their causes, but the perception of the cause also depends upon observation of the effect. Thus, both are defined relatively and have a beginning and an end. The conclusion is all such material causes and effects are essentially temporary and relative and consequently illusory. So, then we go to Krishna, the last paragraph. Supreme Personality of Godhead, although cause of all causes, has no beginning or end. Therefore, he's neither material nor illusory. Lord Krishna's opulence and potencies are absolute reality beyond the interdependence of material cause and effect. So you don't need something material to be able to perceive Krishna. It's not, you need something, not, Krishna's appearance does not depend on this material body, does not depend on something in this world. It's completely above that. So therefore he is the absolute truth. Whatever else we see in this world is temporary, so it cannot be the absolute truth. So Vishwanath brings in Vivartavad again, which is the Mayavadi philosophy. So they say, just as the effect of Brahman, the universe, is unreal, so Brahman as the cause is unreal, so Brahman cannot be the cause. If this universe is temporary, and this is the effect, then the cause must also be temporary. So then if the cause is Brahman, so the cause cannot be Brahman. So you just, what you see is an illusion. It doesn't exist, is what they say. It's according to how you are seeing something that's not there. Yeah. No, not Brahma, Brahman.
Yeah, I know, but
well, they don't say that. I mean, they say it's illusion. Okay. There is no cause. I mean, it's just, you think it's Brahma, but it's one big dream that everybody's having, collective dream. Everybody's sharing here.
Who's dreaming?
Yeah, right. That's a good question. Who's dreaming? That's a good question to ask them. It's the covered Brahman. We are the covered Brahman who is, some part of Brahman is covered and that part is in illusion, in dreaming. So, but when we get liberation, then we will just become part of the uncovered Brahman, which is not dreaming, huh? Yeah. No, one Brahman, but one part is covered. It's very illogical philosophy. Very illogical. Yeah, it's like... And then so Jiva says, okay, well, if we're all Brahman, if we're all one, then if one person gets liberation, everybody should get liberation. It's like, so, you know, it's just like, it doesn't work. So what they say, just as one mistakes a rope for a snake out of ignorance, the rope is the cause and the effect snake is false, so Brahman is mistaken to be the universe out of ignorance. So actually what we're seeing is Brahman, but we're thinking it's the material universe. So what they say. It's sarvam kalvidam Brahma, it's all Brahman. But we're thinking it's something else, so that's the illusion. How can Brahman be the cause when it's dependent on the effect, the universe, which does not exist? So that's their follow-up. Brahma satyam jagat mitya. Jagat mitya. And so this is what they say. 29. So Bhagavatam is setting them right. Although perceived, the transformation of even a single atom of material nature has no ultimate definition without reference to the Supreme Soul. To be accepted as factually existing, something must possess the same quality as spirit, pure spirit, eternal, unchanging existence. So Prakriti does have that nature of eternity, and because it is related to Krishna, or she is related to Krishna. So that is our philosophy. Purport, a mirage of water appearing in the desert is actually a manifestation of light. The false appearance of water is a specific transformation of light. That which falsely appears as independent material nature is similarly a transformation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Material nature is the external potency of the Lord. So Vishwanath says that this universe famous as being subject to change, and even an atom in it cannot be defined without Paramatma. Everything is Paramatma. He says it is all Krishna, actually. We also agree with the impersonalists, everything is Brahman, but we just have a different idea of Brahman. It's Krishna. Everything is Krishna. Ham evasam evagre. Krishna says it is I who am everything. But then Vishnu says, yes, the illusion, the universe is imposed on Paramatma. The illusion of water and mirage will not take place at all without light. It is all light. The illusion of water is imposed on light. However, okay, here's where Krishna consciousness comes in. Some famous objects are perceived as real and spiritual, such as bhakti and things produced by bhakti or within bhakti and the abodes of the Lord. So this is reality. Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwaraka, Puri, these are real. Bhakti is real. Wherever the deities are, that is real. That is reality. If you're looking for reality in this world, and wherever there is devotion to Krishna, that is real. That is reality. So Bhagavatam is helping us to separate illusion from reality. Okay. We're going to have some more gyan today. This is all in preparation for Maharaj Parikshit leaving his body. So again, we weren't finished. 11th canto was not enough. We have to have more now today. And the next chapter is going to be all Sankhya again, all over again, so be prepared. Verse 31. According to their different purposes, men utilize gold in various ways, and gold is therefore perceived in various forms. In the same way, Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inaccessible to material senses, is described in various terms, both ordinary and Vedic, by different types of men. Purport. All those who are not pure devotees of the Supreme Lord are basically trying to exploit the Lord and his energies. According to their strategy of exploitation, they conceive of and describe the Absolute Truth in various ways. In Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the Absolute Truth presents himself as he factually is for the benefit of sincere people who do not foolishly try to conceptually manipulate the Supreme Lord. So all of this is to prove that Krishna is the cause. Krishna is here now, and Krishna will be there, remain at the end. Everything will go back to him at the end, or his form of Mahavishnu. 32. Although a cloud is a product of the sun, it is also made visible by the sun. It nevertheless creates darkness for the viewing eye, which is another partial expansion of the sun. Similarly, material false ego, a particular product of the Absolute Truth made visible by the Absolute Truth, obstructs the individual soul, another partial expansion of the Absolute Truth, from realizing the Absolute Truth. So here we go back again. Who is the culprit? False ego. False ego is covering our vision. It's just like a cloud. The sun is Krishna, but Krishna is producing our false ego because we want it. And the false ego makes a cloud in front of our eyes, so then we cannot see everything here. Krishna is here, everywhere. And that's for your topic, actually, is how to see Krishna everywhere in everything. And he's actually here. He's everywhere in every atom. But we cannot see because of the cloud of false ego. And I was remembering, two things I remembered. One thing from 10th canto, 20th chapter, there was an analogy about the clouds and the moon, that the moon makes the clouds visible, but the clouds cover the moon. But you see, like, even though there's the clouds are covering the moon, you see some light shining through. So that's the moon is compared to the soul. And the soul is within the body, but because the soul is there, then we see some consciousness, some light shining through the body. The body is actually a covering, like the clouds covering the moon. So I was remembering, that was one thing I just remembered, that analogy. Another thing I remembered was what Bhakti Tirtha wrote in one of his books, a very nice essay on one day the false ego decided to leave him. And he was thinking, well, you know, should I let him go? Or, you know, he's been with me for millions of lifetimes. And the false ego is saying, you know, there are many people, you know, I'm very popular. I have many places to go. If you don't want me, you know, I can go elsewhere. But I've really helped you a lot in these last few lifetimes. You know, we've done so many things together. I've helped you become very prominent, and I've helped you do so many things, and now you're sure you want to say goodbye? And then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was sure, and so his false ego left. And then after false ego left, he writes that everything was transformed in his house. It was shining, that because it wasn't his anymore, it was Krishna's, and he could see how it belonged to Krishna, and Krishna was within everything. Because when you have your false ego, then you don't see that way. You see things see things separate from Krishna, separately. Now that is the problem with this being in this material world with a false ego. Verse 33, when the cloud originally produced from the sun is torn apart, the eye can see the actual form of the sun. Similarly, when the spirit soul destroys his material covering of false ego by inquiring into the transcendental science, he regains his original spiritual awareness. Purport. Just as the sun can burn away the clouds that prevent one from seeing it, the Supreme Lord and he alone can remove the false ego that prevents one from seeing him. There are some creatures, however, like owls, who are averse to seeing the sun. In the same way, those who are not interested in spiritual knowledge will never receive the privilege of seeing God. So again, this a verse from first canto, third chapter, verse 33. Whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. If the illusory energy subsides and living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and becomes situated in his own glory. And Prabhupada in the purport explains how all the energies of the Lord, the external, internal, and marginal, it's all the one energy. I mean, it's all Brahman. But he says that the same energy acts as external, internal, and marginal, and Krishna can use any energy and do anything with any of these energies. And we're one of them, too. So marginal, internal, external. He says he can turn external into internal if he likes. And this happens in the life of a devotee. Prabhupada says that by his grace, the external energy, which is employed in illusioning those living beings who want to have it, subsides by the will of the Lord in terms of repentance and penance for the conditioned soul. So when we are feeling repentance and penance, and we're doing penance, that is a symptom that the Maya is being reduced for us. It's going away. And the very same energy then acts to help the purified living being make progress on the path of self-realization. So the same cloud in front of our eyes becomes something that, like a ladder, the obstacle becomes a ladder in our self-realization. So this is being described here, and this is the final annihilation. Final annihilation of the jiva. And that means to go back to Godhead. So this verse is quoted on, this is commented on by Jiva Goswami in Paramatma Sundarbha, talking about false ego. And he says there is a reference to regaining memory, anusmarit. And this shows the original state cannot be a covered state. It means that originally our consciousness was not covered. Anusmarit means we're remembering who we were before. It's a case of amnesia, as we said before. Now everybody in this world is suffering from amnesia. We've forgotten who we are. So when we become uncovered by upadi, upadi, our false ego means upadi, this temporary imposition of something which we are not, something natural. We're naturally devotees. We naturally have love for Krishna. But now we have this imposition of false ego, and this is our prison. So this is the whole message of Bhagavatam is this final liberation of the soul in devotional service. So verse 34, my dear Pariksit, When the illusory false ego that binds the soul has been cut off with the sword of discriminating knowledge and one has developed realization of Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Soul, this is called the Atyantika, or ultimate annihilation of material existence. So, final annihilation is when false ego is destroyed and we go back to Godhead. This is the final Atyantika. Okay. And there is a verse from First Canto, Second Chapter, which describes this also. Vidyate hridaya granti chityante savasanshaya kshiyante chas karmani dishtaye vatmanishare. The knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. Chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. So Prabhupada explains that how this happens is when you surrender to the parampara. You become in parampara and then you hear about Krishna, and then Krishna enlightens you from within. And he says that this false ego, this is the knot of spirit and matter, and this knot of false ego is personally untied by the Lord. So only Krishna can untie the knot of false ego. And then we can go back to Godhead. So this is Atyantika. So we heard about three types of annihilation: Naimitika, Prakritika, and Atyantika. And now we're going to hear about one more type of annihilation. 35. Experts in the subtle workings of nature, O subduer of the enemy, have declared there are continuous processes of creation, annihilation, that all created beings, beginning with Brahma, constantly undergo. Okay, so this is the continuous process of continuous annihilation, constant annihilation, or nityada, or nitya. So we have naimitika, prakritika, atyantika, and nitya, or nityada, nitya, eternal, constant creation annihilation. Okay? All material entities undergo transformation and are constantly and swiftly eroded by the mighty currents of time. The various stages of existence that material things exhibit are the perpetual causes of their generation and annihilation. So we have one body, then we get another body, and the body has different transformations, so it's always changing. So forgetfulness, this is a symptom of the constant annihilation. When we forget, this is a symptom of the continuous or constant annihilation that's happening every second. Right now, we are experiencing this. Our body is deteriorating, and we are forgetting things, and these are symptoms. These are ways we can see, perceive the continuous annihilation. Dehi no smin yata dehe komaram yovaram jara, from boyhood to childhood to youth to old age. So this is what's happening. So what is the, I'll ask you now, what is the naimitika? Partial. And when does that happen?
End of day
of Brahma. What is the prakritika?
End of
a life of Brahma. What is the Atyantika?
Liberation.
And the false ego. That's a real good annihilation. And then the last one, the continuous or constant annihilation is? Dehi no smin. It's happening all the time, every second. You can call it continuous or constant. In Sanskrit, nitya, nitya, I saw in the Sanskrit, it says nityada, nityada, or nitya, nityada, it said, nityada, in two verses, it says nityada, so okay, nityada. Is that correct Sanskrit to call it nityada? Okay, nityada, so we have names for all four, nityada. So Vishwanath says, the cause is explained. Hriyamanasya should be Hriyamananam, the various states of the bodies of living entities, like Balya, Poganda, which are quickly destroyed by the force of the flow of time, are indications of continual birth and death. So the bodies and other objects are at every moment born and dying. So this birth and death is happening every second. Cells in our body, even the scientists accept this, that there is continuous. Because of these various conditions of their bodies, they are compared to flames. We heard that analogy, that the body is like the flames of a candle or the waves of a river. Because the flames, it looks like one flame, but actually it's every second it's different material in the flame. It's different pieces of wood, it's different different pieces of wax in the candle. It's different pieces that are burning. It's not the same. It's different destruction, destruction. And in the, if you look at the waves of the river, if you look at a river, you say, oh, this is the river, but every second it's changing. It's not the same river that you saw 1 second ago. So we look at a person's body, we say, oh, this is such and such. But at, or actually, it's not. It's every the next second, it's somebody else. It's the body's changing. It's a different body. So, but it looks like the same to us. So the river looks like the same, the flame looks like the same, the body looks like the same, but they're changing. It's not the same. So that's what he said here. Now this is continuous or constant annihilation, which is happening here. These stages of existence created by beginningless and endless time, the impersonal representative of the Supreme Lord, are not visible, just as the infinitesimal momentary changes of position of the planets in the sky cannot be directly seen. So we see the sun is moving, but we can't see it. We know the sun is moving, but we can't see it move. We can't really see, unless you're watching its sunrise and sunset very closely, staring at the sun, you might see something. But generally, we don't see the sun moving, and you can't look, you can't, or else you'll go blind. So, but it's moving. So we cannot see these stages of annihilation. Purport, although everyone knows the sun, oh, that's what he says here. Similarly, no one can directly perceive his hair or nails growing, although with the passing of time, we perceive the fact of growth. Time, the potency of the Lord, is very subtle and powerful and is an insurmountable barrier to fools who are trying to exploit material creation. And the scientists are very curious about time now. They think this is the key to finding so many things. But unfortunately, time is controlling them. They are not controlling time. So time will run out before they find what they're looking for. 38. In this way, the progress of time is described in terms of the four kinds of annihilation: continuous, occasional, elemental, and final. So continuous is nityada, occasional is what? In Sanskrit, naimitika, elemental, or prakritika, and final, atyantika. Very good. 39. O best of the crews, I have related to you these narrations of the pastimes of Lord Narayan, creator of this world and the ultimate reservoir of all existence, presenting them to you only in brief summary. Even Lord Brahma himself would be incapable of describing them entirely. 40. For a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries, who desires to cross the insurmountable ocean of material existence, there is no suitable boat except that of cultivating devotion to the transcendental taste for the narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes. So what we heard today are pastimes of Lord Narayan. So if you want to cross the ocean, if you're suffering in the fire of misery and want to cross the ocean, then hear the pastimes of Lord Narayan. Or cultivate devotion to the taste for hearing these pastimes. Purport, although it is not possible to completely describe the pastimes of the Lord, even a partial appreciation can save one from the unbearable miseries of material existence. The fever of material existence can be removed only by the medicine of the holy name and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, which are perfectly narrated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, yesterday we heard about the holy name, and today we're hearing about pastimes of related in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So Vishnu comments, the topics of the Lord are like the life-sustaining medicine for all types of devotees. So if you're sick mentally, then this is your medicine, even physically. It will help to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Even those who, and even for those desiring liberation, even those who desire liberation cannot achieve liberation without these topics. So if you're interested in liberation, then you won't make it unless you hear these topics. That is described in this verse. Or this is the answer to the question you asked at the beginning. What should a dying person do? Remember, how long ago is that? That was in first canto, end of first canto. What should a dying person... So now, finally, he's come to that point. After 12 cantos, he's going to die now, Maharaj Pariksit. So he got the answer to his question. What should a dying person do? Hear Bhagavatam, chant the holy name. Other than food, there is nothing that can satisfy intolerable hunger. There is no other means of crossing material existence like jnana. That would be like giving a garland and sandalwood to a person suffering from hunger. This will be explained later. You should not accept jnana, by which I cover the great secret of bhakti as the recommended process. Rasa in this verse means sweetness produced by the topics of the Lord's pastimes. One should not prescribe any other medicine except this nectar for persons suffering in the great fire of material life. So if any of you become spiritual doctors, you should prescribe this medicine to your students. Okay. Verse 41. Oh, actually, Vishnu quotes 11.11.49. My dear Uddhava, I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life for saintly liberated persons, and thus if one does not engage in my loving devotional service, which is made possible by associating with my devotees, then for all practical purposes one possesses no effective means to escape material existence. 41. Now we'll hear a history. Long ago, this essential anthology of all the Puranas was spoken by the infallible Lord Narayan Rishi to Narada, who then repeated it to Krishna Dvaipayana Vedvyas. So we're hearing now how this must be the end of the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's going to have more ends after this. This is one of the ends of the narration, because then Pariksit is going to die. So this is the end for Shukadeva and Pariksit. Vishnu Chakravarti comments, one should study, teach, hear, and have others hear Bhagavatam following a pure unbroken line of Guru Parampara. That is the intention of this verse. Okay. Wise Narayan taught to Brahma, the missing word Brahma should be supplied. Brahma without decrease in bhakti because of having no offenses taught it to Narada. Verse 42. My dear Maharaj Pariksit, that great personality Śrīla Vyāsadeva taught me the same scripture, Śrīmad Bhagavatam, which is equal in stature to the four Vedas. O best of the crew, is the same Sutta Goswami who is sitting before us will speak this Bhagavatam to the sages assembled in the great sacrifice at Naimisharanya. This he will do when questioned by the members of the assembly headed by Shonaka. So Vishnu Chakravarti says he's pointing his finger to Sutta. This Sutta will speak. That Sutta. So this is one end. Of course, he's going to give some final instructions in the next chapter to Maharaj Pariksit. Very final instructions about how you're not this body. Again, we're going to hear. If we're not yet convinced that we're not this body, we will surely be convinced after the next class. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments on this chapter, chapter 4? Yes, Jagadguru. Naimitika. Which verse? Do you have a verse there? Brahma goes back to the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu also then, it ends up with Mahavishnu. Everything ends up, the final goes to Mahavishnu. This one is Garbhadakshaya, right. The Naimitika goes to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Because the universe is still there. Yes. That's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu that the sages are singing prayers to. Yeah. Sky is the positive quality possesses the quality of sound. So what's the
science that vacuum has now?
It's not a vacuum. They say it's a vacuum.
Even in physics,
Einstein, they had an element called ether,
yeah,
which transmits vibrations. So an audible sound, but it's a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And then they conducted an experiment which proved that it exists, but they claimed it didn't.
Uh-huh.
So that's how they canceled this. But yeah, still, even nowadays, if you study, you will see that they speak about, like they speak about space being curved.
Mm-hmm.
So what is curved? So it is something that is curved, and they speak about some waves of gravity following the space. So there is some waves, which is vibration. Like some,
yeah, the problem is not with us, it's with the scientists who refuse to accept the truth. So even though it's proven by their own, their own science, they won't accept. And that's if you read, you know, these books by our devotees, Dutta Karma, Hidden History of Human Race, and these things, that how they have, there's so many proofs that disprove what they're trying to say, but they selectively take them out so that they can say something atheistic or according to their theories they can prove. Yeah.
They refuse to speak about ether, but they speak about space, which is the same, it has similar.
Yeah, right. Space and ether. So yeah, sound is there. Yes.
Radio waves are transported by to ether.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
And radio waves are a subtle form of sound.
Yeah. Yeah, radio waves are going through ether in the sky. Yeah. I mean, that's very simple. I mean, if they can't accept that much. Radio waves. Oh, there's waves in the air. There's waves in the air. Okay? Yeah.
Drishtyatva. Yeah. Because yeah, it's visible, it's a proof it's not real.
If you see it, that means it's... I know, it's such
eyes,
a...
Our eyes are very...
Edging God out. Ego. That's good. Edging God out. Ego. Yes, very good. So the question is, it says, unless you hear these topics, you're not qualified for liberation. But she's asking, well, what about somebody who has bhakti and has not heard these things? Prajanta, you want to answer that?
Well, bhakti is the fruit of that hearing.
And bhakti is the fruit of hearing.
Either you heard in previous lives.
Yeah, he could have heard in previous lives.
We also heard that those who are too stupid are...
Yeah, right. I thought about that too.
The sound, Krishna gives them.
Yeah, Krishna gives intelligence. Tesham satata yuktanam. Prabhupada said if there is somebody who's devoted, devotionally inclined, but cannot take advantage of the literature of the spiritual master, then the Lord in the heart, that reminds me of that person that Indradumna Maharaj talks about, that again in Paris, his name was Pigpen, who grabbed Prabhupada's feet, and he was allowed to stay, and then they let him clean the temple. He couldn't even speak because he was so much, his mind was gone from drugs. He couldn't speak, he couldn't read, he couldn't speak, but he just did some cleaning, manual, menial service, and then but then that led to hearing. Then he wanted to hear. And he started... First he sold the books before he could read them, and then he started reading them. And so, yes. Yeah, and that's the process. You approach the guru, and you're supposed to hear. It's one of the... what is it? Tadvidhi pradipatena pradiprashnena sevaya. You hear. You serve him, and you hear from him. You ask questions. That's the process. But there is for those who are too stupid, as Prashanta said. There is something for everyone. They can also approach the monkeys. They certainly didn't hear the monkeys of Ram. They didn't hear Bhagavat Katha. What was their qualification? Remember one qualification of the monkeys? Why did the monkeys get more mercy than the demigods? Why was he more... Yeah. They were surrendered to his lotus feet. That was what the monkeys had. So if you're surrendered, then you don't need to hear. So there is an example, the monkeys of Lord Ram. They were surrendered to his lotus feet, so even though they didn't hear Bhagavatam, they didn't hear the glories, but they engage in service. But I believe that Hanuman does chant Ramayana. Hanuman chants. So they might not just be the monkeys like we think of. They also are hearing Ramayana. they're chanting Ramayana. So Kemparushas, are they humans? Yeah, that is one of the one of the heavenly varshas on this earth, earthly Bhu Mandala. It's in Jambudvip, I believe. Is it in Jambudvip or is? Yes, in Jambudvip.
8 to 9 varshas.
Nine varshas in Jambudvip. Yeah, and then there's the islands. Yeah, so they're on one of the varshas.
Mm-hmm. They have temple in Kumbhakonam where Hanuman has Veda and he is chanting Ramayana.
Okay, so in Kumbhakonam they have a temple where Hanuman is chanting
Ramayana
with a Veena. Hanuman has a Veena and he's chanting Ramayana. Yeah, so even the monkeys are hearing actually, so they're not a good example. Who else? The little spider who helped, the squirrel who helped Ram. He didn't hear. And Garuda, huh? Yeah, the Brahmin in South India. The illiterate Brahmin. Yeah, yeah.
She jokes things.
Yeah, but how can a mouse commit offense?
She ate.
Yeah, I know. That's true. Ate the
karma.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so there you do have examples. Examples. But those who are in the human form, they have not much excuse, except...
He gave another example of two drunks.
Two drunks.
Someone
you don't have to do much. Please, Krishna. Why are we struggling? Therefore, how much more is benefited a devotee who is following the regulative principles and serving the spiritual master? Yes. And so we will surely go back to Godhead. At the end of some life, if not this life, we should go back this life, but who knows? Who knows? Okay, any other questions or examples of how bhakti is so easily performed? Bhakti is easily performed. And I did mention in this class, Satyavati, that this planet is not one of the four annihilations. It's not listed.
Before.
Yeah.
First came.
Yeah, okay. Don't worry. We survived in some form or other. We're still here. Okay, so we'll stop here and we'll come back at 12:40.